I'm joined now by Jean-Pierre Verster. He is the founder and CEO of Protea Capital Management. Jean-Pierre, we go back a long time, right back to your 361 asset management days and then Fairtree. And I've been dying to get you into a conversation to understand your take on the markets right now and how you are playing the markets. So perhaps let's just start on the local front with the news flow around the Government of National Unity, the Gauteng news flow, and the fact that the DA is not going to be part of the governance within the largest economy in South Africa. And Helen Ziller earlier this week chatting to Alec Hogg and saying that they will become the opposition then in Gauteng if that's the way that the ANC wants to play it. Alec also saying that it'll be interesting to see if Premier Pan Yazil Sufi does receive a vote of no confidence at this juncture. What are your thoughts?
Yes, thanks, Bronwyn. It is a pleasure talking to you again. It's been a while since we have chatted. It's fascinating, the politics, when in South Africa or in other countries. We might get into that a bit later. But it just shows us, you know, this GNU is going to be two steps forward, one step back. We must be careful to get too optimistic. We had it with Ramaphosa a few years ago. So now with the new dawn, hopefully we can have things like Gauteng not really happening in other places in the country. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. It's in a certain way maybe good that the DA has got certain principles, and they said that they're not just going to be co-opted. They're going to stand firm on those principles. So from an investment perspective, it does mean that maybe Gauteng, we might deal with shenanigans for a while longer, which isn't great for people who live in the province as well as businesses that operate here. But at least we've taken those two steps forward in the rest of the country, and maybe then one step back in Gauteng.
Just in terms of your view on the enlarged cabinet, the additional portfolios that we're seeing, as I'm sure to get the negotiations over the table, that was President Ramaphosa's card to say, well, you know, let's add a couple of ministries. How do you feel about the live land as it has played out at the national level?
So again, from an investor perspective, I think the key ministries that investors were looking at were the ones that had to do with the levers of power and the levers of money. So it was good to see consistency and continuation in the Minister of Finance position. We have a new minister in trade and industry. It's going to be very interesting to see with that ministry, which sometimes made some interesting decisions that weren't necessarily business friendly, and effectively empowered the Competition Commission as well to make some decisions that weren't business friendly, whether we might see a change there. Still, in general, yes, the greater, bigger cabinet is going to cost us as taxpayers more money. But with the same Minister of Finance there, I think investors are hopeful that there will be a conservative hand on the till, that the budget will hopefully at some point be balanced, and we can peak in our debt-to-GDP ratio in the next 2 years. And from then on, we need to bring it down. And that's why you see our 10-year government bond yields are still high relative to the rest of the world, but they haven't spiked further. And in the local stock market, the part of the market that is most sensitive to these types of political changes are the banks. And the banks rose quite sharply in the last month. So that was one area where it indicates that as investors, there's renewed optimism that the formation of the government went as well as it could be. And the banks have risen. And now the question is, what's gonna rise next? Are there any other opportunities in the market, which we believe there are?
And the Rand, Jean-Pierre, I know that it's crystal ball time when I ask you for a forecast on the Rand, but we are seeing a stronger Rand. And maybe that's just a sigh of relief as Gauteng hasn't imploded to this point. But Where do you lie with the Rand going forward? I mean, the volatility is one thing we know. Do you think perhaps we could have found a new solid direction to a firmer local unit?
So the Rand has been quite volatile again the last 2 weeks, as we have these two steps back, two steps forward, one step back shenanigans happening. Still above 18, which isn't great. I think a lot of people said that if we do get this type of outcome where we are now, maybe the rand could have strengthened to well below 18. Now, there are some reasons that that hasn't happened. It isn't just to do with South Africa, some international as well. But if we continue with taking a few more steps forward, I wouldn't be surprised if the rand strengthens to below 18. Now, taking a longer-term view, we must still remember that structurally, we have a higher inflationary economy and environment versus a lot of other countries. And that interest rate differential is an indication over the long term about the type of weakness you can see in the country with a higher inflation rate versus the one with the lower inflation rate. So with inflation still running higher than other countries, I will expect over the long term still the rand to weaken. So yes, maybe a strengthening in the short term, below 18. But in the long term, I think as South African investors, again, it makes sense to take some money offshore, diversify your investments, and the rand over the long term will probably continue to weaken because of this interest rate differential, at least against the US dollar.
Before we move off the South African environment, what stocks do you believe we could be playing in South Africa for a longer term, for longer term positivity in the markets?
So I've mentioned the banks because they have so far indicated the biggest move after the relief and the positivity regarding the government of national unity being formed.
Is the rally over in the banks? Still time to get in?
So that, yes, that's an interesting one. So even though they've rallied quite sharply, the banks fell off a cliff just after COVID in early 2020. And for the next 2 years, they recovered to mid-2022, and then they went sideways for the last 2 years. So the banks are still cheap. They're still trading around net tangible asset value per share. And therefore, I believe that even though we've had quite a jump now, if we continue with this positive progress we have seen recently, the banks still have some significant upside as well. So we're not selling our bank shares. We've benefited from
them. Do you own across the board?
We own three of the universal banks. So we own FirstRand, Standard Bank, and Nedbank. Those are our preferred three banks of the four universal banks. And then the next wave, we believe, is the retailers. Some of them have jumped, but some of them are in dire straits as well. If you think about Pick n Pay and Spar, they have their own challenges. So we've preferred the likes of Mr. Price and Truworths. They've done quite well for us. And again, we think there's a little bit more juice from these two lemons. They are good quality companies. And then it's the smaller cap stocks, which will probably be after that.
Before we move off the consumer stocks, you believe there's more upside despite the pressure that the South African consumer is under?
So because of that pressure, we're not quite as optimistic on the retailers as we are on the banks, for instance. If you look at the balance sheet of the banks, they are conservatively managed, strong balance sheets. Some of the retailers like Spar and Pick n Pay in a bit more trouble. Still optimistic about the ones that have strong balance sheets, but not across the board. And then for the smaller capitalization stocks, some of them are exposed to the consumer. We still like the likes of Famous Brands, Cashbuild, Italtile. In time, if we get growth going in the country because of hopefully positive political moves, that positivity from the consumer getting into a much better space than where the consumer is right now should translate into better sales for the likes of those three companies. So you can sort of start with the banks. And the next wave that should benefit are the retailers and then some of the smaller capitalization stocks. So those are the stocks in South Africa that we like.
Thank you. A wealth of stocks to play with there. Now let's move to the international space. And again, politics, determining economic trajectory and certainly bringing uncertainty to the fore. Talk to me about UK and Europe.
Yeah, so we're recording this on the US Independence Day, which is also the day the UK is voting. We'll probably see a Labour government come in after that's the expectation. So that's going to be interesting. And in Europe as well. I mean, we had the first round of the French elections last weekend, the next round is coming weekend. So a lot of uncertainty. And you saw that in the last month with, to some extent, the FTSE, the UK's stock exchange, but to a greater extent, the CAC 40, the stock market in France and the index there. It dropped quite sharply, the banks and some consumer stocks in France. because of this uncertainty about the election, and is the new government going to be quite a bit more to the right, maybe not quite as business friendly? And we see that as an opportunity. So in Europe, yes, a lot of political uncertainty. The UK has been cheap for a while. We've liked the UK for the better part of 2 years, and we still like the UK. But all of a sudden now France is also on the radar, and we do own some stocks in France, and we've been picking up a few more because of the weakness we've seen in the last few weeks. Yeah.
Specifically, what sectors, Jean-Pierre?
So there are a few consumer stocks we like. For instance, a company like Trigano. It's the biggest manufacturer and seller of what are called RVs or recreational vehicles in Europe. So the likes of motorhomes and caravans. So a lot of French people wouldn't have taken their summer holiday because they now need to stay home and vote, or they might be sticking around for the Olympics. So that share has taken a hit. We like that share. We also like the bigger luxury goods businesses like LVMH and Hermes, which also have, after a very strong showing the last year or so, are flat to slightly down. And we do think that with the Chinese consumer coming back and hopefully spending a bit more after a few tough years in China, the luxury goods business is also looking decent. So a few
is
opportunities
Richemont
in France.
In Richemont in play with LVMH?
I don't know about LVMH. I know that LVMH would love to have Richemont, and specifically Cartier, as one of their maisons. But the other one we also bought recently is Kering, which is the French luxury goods business that owns Gucci. And there's a case to be made that Gucci is going through a slump at the moment. And maybe it makes more sense for Richemont to partner up with Kering rather than being sold to the big conglomerate LVMH. So Johan Rupert made some changes recently in the senior management of Richemont to make sure there's proper succession, and he's taken a bit of a step back from day-to-day management of Richemont. So I would say either Kering or LVMH. And that means Richemont is probably not in play right now, but we also own some Richemont because we do think in the fullness of time, it makes sense for the Rupert family to hand over the business to one of those two.
You mentioned the Chinese consumer. What about Chinese regulation? Is that on your radar from an investment theme perspective?
Yes. In a country where politicians really play a leading role, like China, you always need to keep your eye on regulations. There's the third plenary coming up in a few weeks' time. So the politicians will get together again and make some new rules, some new laws that will be swiftly implemented. And we saw previously how swiftly certain laws when it comes to miners playing video games or some of the large tech stocks, giving back some of the money that they made for common prosperity purposes, or that can have an influence on Chinese stocks. So definitely you need to keep an eye on that. And a lot of people have said in the recent past, China is uninvestable. We don't believe it's uninvestable. It's just different. You need to get your head around the fact that you need to partner with a government there, and you can't be too antagonistic towards the government there. But if that's the way you could operate as a business, then we think there are profitable opportunities in China.
Can I push you on those profitable opportunities?
Sure. Again, stocks that we've liked for a while, and China has also gone 2 steps forward, 1 step back in terms of their economic recovery, include Tencent and Meituan. Meituan is like the Uber Eats of China, the leading food delivery platform. But more recently, we've also bought some consumer stocks. A company like Anta, for instance, they are the leading sports apparel retailer in China. They own Fila in the West, and they're one of the sponsors of the Olympics. And they sell apparel and sneakers in China, a big business, the third worldwide after Nike, for instance, and a few others. So one of the top five biggest sports apparel businesses. And then for a while, we've also owned BYD. So if you look at the EV market, the electric vehicle market, between Tesla and BYD, BYD is now neck and neck with Tesla for being the biggest seller of electric vehicles worldwide. So those are a few of the Chinese stocks.
Just chatting about Tesla, market players very divided on where to go with regards to Tesla, and its performance of late has been very good. I was chatting to Alec earlier about Cy Jacobs not being in the Elon Musk camp and thinking that Tesla's near implosion. What is your view?
I basically share Cy's view. We were colleagues for many years, you know, in the hedge fund space, they say you should never be cynical, but you should be skeptical. And hedge fund managers by their nature are quite skeptical. And if you look at the Tesla financials with a skeptical eye, there's a lot to be skeptical about, and about Elon Musk. So we have a short position in Tesla, and we have this long position in BYD. And we're quite comfortable with that. We do think that BYD is bringing out EVs at a much lower cost, better technology, while Tesla has got their own struggles and making promises, which in the past they find hard to fulfill a year later. So yes, we aren't bullish on Tesla. Our preference in the EV market is to own BYD.
We saw results out from Prosus recently, and obviously their e-commerce business moving to profitability. You mentioned Tencent. I've got to pick up on Tencent. Is that an entry point for you into China and the gaming environment technology space?
Definitely. Naspers and Prosus combined is our biggest holding in our South African funds. In the past, we've also owned it internationally, because you can buy Prosus listed in Amsterdam. But at the moment, we prefer to have the direct Tencent exposure. And depending on the discount, we sometimes own Tencent, sometimes own Prosus. But the fact that they got to profitability with the rump, the rest of the business, the e-commerce business, is positive and shows that with the new management team, hopefully they are done throwing spaghetti against the fridge, with most of the spaghetti pieces not being very valuable. And from here on out, they'll work hard to create value for shareholders. So we definitely still like a process as an entry point to Tencent, but also in its own right because of the rest of the e-commerce portfolio.
I also just want to switch to the US and anything that strikes your fancy in that space. You do, of course, have the hard growth managers like the Paul Tarons, NVIDIA. They're still stocking up on Microsoft, Apple, you name it. I'm anticipating that you're not in the same camp?
Not quite. So we own two of the Magnificent Seven. We own Alphabet and we own Meta. But we effectively missed the boat with NVIDIA. And that's a big shame, because the Magnificent Seven as a group have really driven the stock market in the US and therefore world markets as well year to date. It's a very large proportion of the MSCI World's return and the S&P's return is because of the Magnificent Seven. It's more than half. And then within that Magnificent Seven, NVIDIA has really driven the index even further. If you look at the comparison of the S&P equally weighted index to the S&P market cap weighted index, for many years, the movement was very similar. And all of a sudden, the last month or two, the market cap weighted index has really pulled in away from the equally weighted index. And that is all about NVIDIA. So we've missed that boat, but at least we had some other semiconductor stocks. So the likes of ASML, it's listed in Europe, but it's a big player in the semiconductor industry. KLA is another one that maybe South Africans don't know, but they are involved in the whole process of creating the machines that create the semiconductor chips, including the likes of the chips that NVIDIA sells. And in Europe, there's another one called BESI, BESI. So a very niche part of the market to create.
Clay. That's in Europe.
Correct.
BESI.
That's in Europe. Yes, BESI. And it's a very niche part of the whole value chain, because they create the machines that create the chips that are used to create machines. But those shares have done very well. Not quite as well as NVIDIA, but at least we have those numbers.
They've done well. Is there still time to get into them? The likes of ASML and BESI.
We still own them. We've sort of trimmed them as they've doubled and gone up even a bit more over the last 12 to 18 months. But we prefer them from a valuation perspective when we compare it to NVIDIA. NVIDIA at the moment, there's a literally an arms race for their chips. But the likes of AMD and a few others are really coming to the party and also improving their chips. So that at some point, we think there could be a reasonably competitive alternative to just NVIDIA. And when this arm race ends, we think that the profitability of NVIDIA could turn out to be quite cyclical, while these other companies is a more structural play on semiconductors, because if you look at the long-term nature of semiconductors, every year there's more electronics. So that's for us a more defensive part of this whole value chain.
Jean-Pierre, you've spoken about a lot of stocks, and for that, I'm very grateful. But in the true style of our former engagements, if you were to name your hottest stock emanating from this conversation, what would that be?
So of all the stocks I mentioned, I like the old school bricks and mortar, kicking the tires company like Trigano. So making motorhomes, making caravans, you know, people can't sit in front of computers all day, and AI is done very well, but hopefully we'll still need humans, and hopefully humans will still need to take a break every now and then. So we do think there's an opportunity with the ructions in the French market that a company like Trigano is as good an opportunity as any other in a very expensive market in general.
Appreciate your time as always. Jean-Pierre Verstaer is the founder and CEO of Protea Capital Management, joining us here on BizNews. Thank you.